I don't know what you came up with. Even as I think, should I have this on or not? What do we think? Yeah. If it starts making noise, I'll just turn it off. I don't know what you think about that. And when I think about how do you measure worth, I think back to some specific instances. So we're obviously in the middle of a baby boom. Patterson's welcome. Noah Patterson, welcome to BT3. Although he's in the crash. Oh, sorry. We're in the middle of a baby boom, and before Jenny was born, we were down in Bournemouth, and we, you know, hit that point where we suddenly realised that we needed to start getting ready for this new arrival. And so we went looking for a pram. We went to Mothercare, and I could not believe how much people charge for a pram. Right? £800 for a pram. I wanted to walk out and it straight away. I thought, well, you know, we'll just teach the baby to walk very quickly. Is a pram worth £800? Maybe you've been involved in the conversation. I mean, that's one of the things. It's just a gut reaction. Is something worth that much? Prams are not worth £800. But maybe the other thing is to compare. So one of the conversations you might have had, depending on your social circles, is hear people complain about how much sportsmen, and specifically footballers, earn. And one of the ways the conversation goes is, how can a footballer be worth this much a week when doctors and people who serve in the armed forces only earn a fraction of that amount? Are footballers worth £200,000 a week? Maybe not. Maybe you remember back to the MasterCard advert. See, that the phrase was, there are some things that money can't buy, but for everything else there's MasterCard. And the advert would show a series of things, you know, maybe a guy on a date and, you know, he's buying flowers and they cost, you know, £15 and chocolate, so they'd be, you know, £10 and, you know, but that moment when she says yes, priceless. You know, that idea. And that idea of how much things are worth. And so here's our question for this morning. How much is Jesus worth? As we approach Easter Sunday is a week away, Good Friday, 5-6 days away, how much is Jesus worth? And how much is Jesus worth to you? Let's return to the passage that Laura just read to us, Mark 14. We read earlier, this is Palm Sunday, the week leading up to the death and resurrection of Jesus. And we read the account of how Jesus came into Jerusalem and the crowd shouted, Hosanna, Savior, as he came in, riding on the donkey. And so we're in the final days of the life of Jesus. And Mark, as in his account, is going to show us that Jesus is the King. But he's the King who is ready to die. And he shows us how much Jesus is worth to one woman, to one unnamed woman. So let's read verse 1. Now the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away. And listen, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus secretly and kill him. But not during the festival, they said, or the people may riot. The Passover is coming, the Jewish festival. The most important event of the year for the Jewish nation, for the Jewish people. And we, as we come in on Mark 14, we sit in on a waiting game. There are people who hate Jesus. There are people who do not value Jesus. In fact, they want to kill Jesus. But they're waiting. They're waiting for the opportune time. They recognize that the crowd loved Jesus. They were there as Jesus came in on the donkey. They heard the crowd shouting that this is the Son of David, the promised one. And so they think, we can't kill Jesus during the festival. The crowds will riot. We'll never get away with it. But they are looking to kill Jesus. Make no mistake. And so they are waiting. But even as we come into Mark 14, we find that Jesus is also waiting. Look down at verse 3. While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, and even the word reclining is it's quite a laid back, it's a waiting thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Refining. I like refining, it's great. Jesus is waiting too. Bethany is this, a village 2 miles east of Jerusalem. So Jesus has come to the capital, the nation's capital, and he's come to die. He knows that, and he's told other people that, and yet people haven't quite got their heads around it. And now he's waiting. And as Jesus is reclining at the table, in walks a woman. Verse 3, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. With Middle Eastern culture, 2,000 years ago, when you met for food, it was the polite thing to do for the host of the house to basically give you the opportunity to clean yourself up a little bit. Right? They weren't driving around in cars. They weren't in a society where, you know, you could just get the Hoover out afterwards and clean up. And they didn't have, you know, shoes and clothes that would keep them from getting dirty. They were walking around all day in the dust and the dirt. And so people would, you know, when they gathered together, they would come and they'd be sweaty and dirty and smelly. And I guess it wasn't talked about too much. If everybody's smelly, you probably just tend not to mention it. But it was the right and the respectful thing to do for somebody, either the host of a gathering, to provide a way for you to wash, and also to provide some, maybe perfume, to give to people to cover up the smell. We can't imagine it really, because, you know, we are in our, you know, 2,000 years down the line, and everybody's, you know, 1, 2, 3 showers a day, and, you know, a bath at night, and we're a very clean, hygienic society. You know, actually, in our culture, if somebody walked into your house and said, "Bit of deodorant," it'd be quite offensive. You know, that sort of approach. But in this society, this is what we should expect. It's a polite thing to do, so that everybody can sort of get on with their food and not worry too much about it. It was a smelly culture. I don't mean that in a derogatory way, it's just the reality. So this woman comes in, and Mark doesn't tell us her name, and she comes in with a perfume, and she's got this alabaster jar. So imagine the jar, and you may see it in films, or, you know, I think Disney films, Hercules, they have these jars, but like a round bottom with a very thin neck, and it would be full of a perfume. And actually we find out that it's full of nard. Nard would have come probably from India. And remember, they're not in a Tesco society where we can have anything we want from wherever we want all the time. This would have been something significant. It would have taken real effort and time and money to get. And this woman has got this jar, and this jar is designed with this really thin neck that as you pour it out, because it's so expensive, and you don't want to, you know, waste it, as you pour it like this, you turn it upside down, out will come a little drop. Just a little drop. And you anoint the people in the room. Here's a little bit of perfume. Polite, it's respectful. But in walks this woman, and she goes beyond politeness, beyond respect. Because you see, she doesn't just give Jesus a little bit of perfume. She goes much further. Look at the end of verse 3. The woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Now, just imagine. This is not smashing it on his head. It's not an aggressive thing. But what she does, she says, "I can't just give you a little bit. You're not just worth a drop of this very expensive perfume. I need to give it all to you. All of it." And so she breaks off the top of the jar, this thin neck that stops lots of it coming out, so that she can access all of the perfume. And then she pours it on Jesus' head. She doesn't pour a drop, but she breaks the bottle. The woman treats Jesus in a polite way, the perfume, that's what we would expect. The woman treats Jesus in a respectful way. She singles him out. Mark doesn't tell us about anybody else. She knocks. She walks into the room and goes straight to Jesus. You are the most important person. The woman treats Jesus in an extravagant way. Not just a drop, but the whole jar. I wonder what you would have thought if you were sat in the room. Did you notice the value of the perfume? Because the people in the room certainly did. Look at their response in verse 4 and verse 5. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, "Why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor." And they rebuked her harshly. It could have been sold for more than a year's wages. Now just imagine what you earned in a year. Imagine that value of money. Even for, the poorest of us, that's a significant amount to be poured away on one person in one moment. Some of the commentators reckon that this alabaster jar of perfume of nard would have been like a family heirloom. The family wealth would have been tied up. They would have invested in this. It would have been worth, obviously, a significant amount. I don't think many of us, especially those of us who don't own houses, will own anything that is equivalent to a year's worth of our wages. But this woman did. And actually, we can surmise from the response of the other people in the room that this is an outrageously generous act. This is not just something like, "Oh, okay, I'll just do something nice." This is a premeditated, ridiculously generous act to pour away that much money. More than polite, it's more than respectful, it's extravagant worship. How much is Jesus worth to this woman? He's worth at least a year's wages. Jesus is worth more to her than financial security, more than her children's inheritance, more than financial prudence. Jesus is worth more than all of those things to her. This momentary act of love for Jesus is worth more to her than anything else. Let me put it in modern terms. She would rather pour out her wealth on Jesus than live in a nice house. She would rather pour out her wealth on Jesus than live in a nice house in a middle class area with good schools for her kids. She would rather give it to Jesus than dress herself or her children in the latest fashions, or to give her children maybe music lessons. All these things that we, and for most of us as middle class Westerners, these things that we see as a sign of a good life, she sees Jesus as more important. Loving Jesus is her priority, because Jesus is worth everything to her. What we see. This perfume pours down Jesus' head. Jesus is worth everything to her. Well then, let me ask this question. Why does it matter what Jesus is worth? Why does it matter? I don't know where you're at this morning, but I think that's a pretty key question. Why does it matter what Jesus is worth? And so we're going to zoom back into the room. And we find the response of the other people in the room. They are dressing this woman down. They are, Mark tells us, rebuking her harshly at the end of verse 5. "Woman, you're such a fool," they say. This perfume that you've just poured away could have been used for so many better things. You could have sold the perfume, got the money, and fed the poor. Far more useful, far more worthy. And maybe we understand that response. maybe we think, wow, couldn't she have just, you know, used like a quarter of it? That would have still been, you know, remarkably generous. But then she could have done so much, yeah, so much else with all the rest of it. Aren't there better things that she could have done? Aren't there better things that we can do than to love Jesus in this extravagant way? Can't we feed the poor? Can't we raise money for charity? Can't we help those that are struggling? Can't we, you know, give homes to the homeless? The list of things, good things that we can do is almost endless. And the list of things that we do rather than love Jesus is equally as endless. I mean, they're all good things. Jesus himself says so. Look at down at verse 7. Verse 6, Jesus says, leave her alone. Why are you bothering? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want. But you will not always have me. Jesus quotes from Deuteronomy 15, the law that God gives to his people. He says that the poor you will always have with you. He's not saying that it's a bad thing to feed the poor. The verse he quotes is the exact opposite of that. It's God's provision for those that are poor, who are weak, who are helpless. But Jesus says, what she has done to me is beautiful. It is right. Her, Jesus' priority is the right priority. Her love for him, her kindness to him, her worship of him is beautiful. Maybe it achieves nothing in the whole wide world. It doesn't seem to benefit anybody else. But Jesus said it is a beautiful thing that she has done. Do not rebuke her. Leave her alone. She has done a beautiful thing. Why does it matter how much Jesus is worth? Well, here's the truth. Only Jesus is worthy of this sort of beautiful act. Only Jesus. Because only of him could it be said that it was better to pour out this poor perfume on him rather than give money to the poor. No other man or woman could have stood in his place and it would have been a better thing. It would have been a beautiful thing. Only because it's Jesus. Only he of all the men, of all the people, in all the world, through all of history, only he is worthy of this sort of love. This sort of act of devotion. So why does it matter? Why does it matter for us, for me, for you? Because we are people who worship. We've only got to look around our society and every society in the entire world to see that we are people who worship. We worship people, we worship things. And by worship, we're saying worship is the acknowledgement in words, in what we say and in what we do, of something being greater than us. Somebody being worthy of our time and our effort. That's what worship is. And we are people who worship. Every one of us. Things and people. We are made to worship. We are made to love and to follow. But here's two things. The things and the people that we worship frequently show themselves to be unworthy. So I'm saying Jesus is worthy of this, but everything else is not. And let me give you an example. One of the things that we and our society, our culture worships is money. The love of money. But you've only got to see what happened after the financial meltdown a few years ago to see how flawed, how unsatisfying that is. See people's responses to the expenses scandals with our politicians. When people love money, it doesn't satisfy. And it shows itself to be unworthy of our worship. Or think of people. And I don't know the people that you love or even are tempted to worship, but we can think of public figures that people do. People in the sporting world, think of Ryan Giggs, held up as this paradigm of the type of player that you want to be, a private guy, a genuinely good footballer. Except it turns out he was sleeping with his brother's wife. No people can ever fulfill that requirement for perfect worship. People can't sustain it. Think of Martin Luther King, brilliant and admirable in so many ways, and yet morally flawed. Not faithful to his wife. Secondly, the things and the people we currently worship aren't bringing us the happiness and fulfillment that we want. Jesus says, you come to me and find life. But we look for life and fulfillment in all sorts of other different places. In people, in relationships, in family. But those things never satisfy. We are made to worship, but the things that we have and do worship do not satisfy. They are not worthy of the worship that Jesus received from this woman. Jesus says that he can. He can satisfy. He says that he is worthy of this worship. It's right to give to the poor, but it is a better thing for him to be the person, the object of this devotion, of this unnamed woman. He says, I am the way, the truth and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the one who heals and restores. I am the Son of God who has come to bring salvation to this world. That is why I am worthy. Why does it matter what Jesus is worth? Because what he offers we can find nowhere else. And we try. And daily we try and we look elsewhere. So let me ask the final question. Why is Jesus worth this much? Why is Jesus worth this much? We've kind of alluded to it already, but let's go back into the passage. As we look at this unnamed woman, let's learn from her because she knows Jesus. And through her, Jesus revealed who he is. So look down again at verse 1, the scene-setting verse. Now the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away. Mark doesn't need to tell us this. It doesn't seem to add much to the story. It doesn't seem to change anything about what this woman does. And yet he wants to point us, not just to the chronological, this is when it happened, but he wants to get us to start thinking about the Passover. See, the time is set in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. We're waiting for the Passover. It's 2 days away. And the Passover is when the Jewish people remember and celebrate what God did for them thousands of years earlier, when he rescued them, when he rescued them and their descendants from slavery in Egypt. Let me flip back to Exodus chapter 12, when God institutes this festival of the Passover. Exodus 12, verse 3. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb for his family, one for each household. If any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share one with their nearest neighbour, having taken into account the number of people that there are. Verse 5. The animals you choose must be year-old males, without defect, and you may take them from the sheep or the goats. Take care of them until the 14th day of the month, when all the members of the community of Israel must slaughter them at twilight. And then skip down to verse 13. The blood from the lamb will be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. No destructive plague will touch you when I strike Egypt. This is what God says to his people who are enslaved in Egypt. I'm going to save you. And I'm going to come and judge Egypt. But you too are in need of judgment. They're not perfect. He says, you will be saved by the shedding of the blood of a lamb. this male lamb. This lamb that had no defect. It was a perfect lamb. And if we were Jewish readers, this is all what we'd have in mind, as Mark says, it's 2 days from the Passover. The people are waiting to celebrate. The Passover is coming, where the spotless male lamb will be slaughtered to commemorate how God passed over his people, over the people of Israel, when he comes in judgment, and how he rescued them from slavery, and how he took them to a new land of hope and fulfillment and blessing. Who's this lamb? Look at verse 3. When he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. This amount of perfume would have probably covered a lot more than his head. Actually, John has got an account of the same incident and talks about how it goes on Jesus' feet. But Mark points out that it goes on Jesus' head. The oil dripping down, the perfume on Jesus' head. Reminiscent of the king of the Old Testament when they were anointed. God saying, "This is my king." Look to verse 8. And Jesus said, "She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial." Jesus said, she is preparing me for when I die. And we're going, Passover, lamb, the lamb who dies to save the people, the lamb who is a male, who is spotless, and the king who is anointed, and Jesus who's going to die in 2 days. And we say, why is Jesus worthy of worship? Because Jesus is the king who died for his people. He is the lamb who is slain in place of the people. And nobody else in all of history can stand in his place and be worthy of worship, because nobody else will die for sins. Nobody else will provide life and salvation for those who are lost. Only Jesus. Jesus is the perfect, the ultimate Passover lamb. Jesus came to die. Jesus was the man without defect, without sin. The man who would be slaughtered. Not by the hands of a priest. Not by the head of the family. But he would be slaughtered on a Roman cross. He would bear the wrongdoing of the people. He would die that they might live. That's why Jesus is worthy of worship. That's how much Jesus is worth to those he died for. And we don't know how much this woman knew, but we know that she sees in Jesus the ultimate hope of life. Jesus was willing to die for people like this woman, this unnamed woman who, as far as we're aware, has got no social standing. He's willing to die for the people in the room who are saying, looking at her and going, "You should think you should know better than that. There are better things to do than that." For self-righteous people like them. He was willing to die even for those who were put to death. Willing to die for the thief on the cross beside him, who hurled insults at him, and yet then came to him to ask for hope and for life. "Remember me," he said, "this day you will be with me in paradise." Jesus came to die for people like us. People like us. This man, this Jesus is worthy of worship. He is of infinite value. This is Jesus. And he came and he died for all those who would believe in him. How much is Jesus worth? Jesus is worth everything. Because he gave up everything for us. So how do we respond? How do we respond to this incredible act of love and devotion, this extravagant giving? Well, if your heart responds to these words, is to acknowledge that Jesus is worth everything. that the things that you chase after are not worth it. You need to pray. You need to come to God, to speak to God, and to ask Him to forgive you for looking elsewhere, for loving elsewhere, and to thank Him that because of Jesus that you can come to know Him and to love Him just as this world did. If your harsh response to the woman's extravagance is to think that there are better things to do, well then you need to look again to the cross. So many of us, and I include myself in this, get carried away with all sorts of good things, all sorts of church things, and forget that ultimately this is about Jesus. If we're not living for Jesus, if we're not loving Jesus, if we're not giving of ourselves to Jesus, then we've missed the point. No matter how many years we've sat in, well, all sorts of different buildings, no matter how long we've been part of the church, we need to look at the cross and see just how valuable Jesus is. What does extravagant love for Jesus look like? And he looks like the busiest person making good time to worship Jesus, to come to his word, and to come to him in prayer, and to worship him. That's extravagant in our society. Our society where we are so busy with so many things, for the person who sets aside that time each day to love Jesus. That's extravagant. And yeah, of course we could talk about finances. He gave everything to me. In him I have all. So be extravagant. Notice the things that you want, that you are giving towards, that you're setting aside your money towards, that where Jesus is not the priority. The church is not so different from the world in this. We want all the same things. We want the house. We want to live in a nice area. We want to send our kids to good schools. And all of these sort of things are coming in and crowding us. And are we going to put Jesus first? He will look after us. He will care for us. And to know Jesus and to worship Jesus and to love Jesus in this extravagant way is the most incredible blessing. Look at what Jesus said. Truly I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. It's not why she did it. And yet, she finds incredible blessing that for 2,000 years, people have been meeting and saying, look at this woman. Look at her love for Jesus. Oh, that we would have that sort of love for Jesus. But if you see this woman's beautiful act and you think, what a waste. And I want to just look at the final couple of verses and just warn you. Look at verse 10. Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to betray Jesus to them. This woman's act of extravagant giving, this extravagant love for Jesus, is the thing that Mark says, this tips Judas over the edge. He's one of the 12, one of Jesus' closest friends and followers. And yet it's this extravagance of the woman that tips him over the edge. He goes to the chief priest to betray Jesus. Verse 11, they were delighted to hear this and promised to give him money. So he watched for an opportunity to hand him over. Mark bookends this little section. He starts by talking about the desire of the chief priest to kill Jesus, and he closes with Judas becoming the key piece in their plan. Judas will hand him over. And the two things on the outside just highlight what goes on in the middle. See, they're trying to kill Jesus in secret, and she does this beautiful thing for Jesus in the open. She is prepared to give so generously. That's how much Jesus is worth to her. But Judas is prepared to sell Jesus out. 30 pieces of silver. That's how much Jesus is worth to him. Only using Jesus to get his own temporary, momentary reward. If Jesus is worth so little to you, look at Judas. Be warned, because Judas finds no satisfaction in the money that he gets. In fact, he despairs and takes his own life, because there is no satisfaction, only guilt in rejecting Jesus. There is no life, there is only death. So let me plead with you, is Jesus worth everything? He is. He is. Let me pray.